Welcome to the Faithful Traveler Radio Show on Breadbox Media. I'm Diana Von Glahn, your host, and I'm also the host, co-creator, writer, editor, and second camera person for the Faithful Traveler television series that broadcasts on EWTN and which you can watch online. Today, I'm talking with my dear friend Jeff Young, the Catholic foodie, about food and faith. Let's get into that conversation. Just yesterday, we actually celebrated the Feast of Mary. And I know you and I were talking about this a little bit before we started recording this episode, but I actually did my first live show yesterday, which was kind of nerve-wracking, but it was a lot less work. So.
Well, that's one of the pluses, I think, of doing the live show.
Yeah. Definitely. But then, you know, like I was worried that I wasn't going to have anything to say. But I mean, how can you not have something to say about Mary? You know, I mean, we're talking about Mary. So, you know, one of the things that Denise was on the show yesterday with me, and we talked about the Church of St. Anne, which I know you have been to in Jerusalem, right?
Beautiful.
Yeah. What was your experience there?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think the thing that really struck me, and it's one of the reasons why I wanted to go to the Holy Land to begin with, is, you know, our faith. I think a lot of times we can get really caught up in kind of over spiritualizing things in a way, mm-hmm. and we forget the fact that God like became man. Mm-hmm. Right? I mean, Jesus was a baby. Right. And, like, you know, he had to have his diapers changed. I mean, they didn't make Pampers back then, but, you know, he had to have his diapers changed and he had to eat, you know, and he probably was breastfed and, you know what I mean? So mm-hmm. all this real, real nitty gritty stuff. And, you know, to think about St. Anne, to think about, like, Mary as a human being rather than a statue on a pedestal is, I think, for me, very faith building. You know, mm-hmm. it's something that really strengthens my faith and helps me to grow closer to God, because it's I know that he's not, he meets me where I am. Mm-hmm. He meets me right where I am, and I don't have to be somebody else, and I don't have to be perfect, and I don't mm-hmm. have to be, you know, super spiritual in order to meet God. He meets me right here. And so that's really, I think, in a lot of the places that I went to in the Holy Land, and I guess anything that had to do with Jesus' early life, mm-hmm. you know, the time in Bethlehem, the time in Nazareth, when I was there, St. Anne's Church,
right?
All these different places really helped me to, I don't know, feel like I'm part of the family too, mm-hmm. you know, that it's real. This is real. Yeah. And these people are real, and it's not just pie in the sky. Yeah. So I don't know. It was cool, you know?
So now, can you explain that a little bit? Like, why did it make you feel like you were more part of the family?
I don't know. I just think that, you know, sometimes in our lives we get so busy.
Yeah.
You know, we tend to be a little over busy. And so when it comes to things like prayer and spirituality, it's almost as if the temptation is to categorize it, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what I do on Sunday. That's right. What I do when I'm going to, even if you pray every day, that's what I do when I go and I say my prayers. That's when I pray my rosary. I'm like mm-hmm. this. And then the rest of the time, I'm a jerk. No, I mean, the rest of the time, I'm, you know, whatever. But the fact that this is, it's all cohesive. It's all one. I mean, who I am right now talking to you is really the same person I am when I'm talking to Jesus, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. and to realize that, and that's the thing, is that when you see these places and you're actually walking the same roads, the same places where Jesus was, where Mary was,
right.
To me, there was just this real, I guess the word is visceral. Mm-hmm. You know, it's something that you can experience, feel as tangible, right. connection with them. That was my experience, at least.
No, I totally agree. I mean, it was funny because, you know, Denise and I were talking a little bit about how, because I like one of the things that confused me when I went to the Holy Land, and especially when I went to the Church of St. Anne and then to the Basilica of the Annunciation in Nazareth, was that both of them was like the Church of St. Anne was built on top of the place where Mary was born. And then the Basilica of the Annunciation was built on top of Mary's house when the Annunciation took place. And I was like, hang on a minute, where did Mary live? You know? And so the first time that I was there, it didn't occur to me, you know, like it was just such a whirlwind and you're just kind of going and you're looking at all these places. But then when I came home and I started working on The Faithful Traveler in the Holy Land, that was when the question occurred to me, because I was like, wait a minute, where does she live? Did they move? Like what, you know? And that was when I went back this last April, I asked my guide and he was like, Joachim was wealthy and, you know, he either had two homes or they moved, you know, and when they were younger, you know, they lived in the temple area because he had something to do with the temple and they dedicated Mary to the temple. And then when she got engaged to Joseph, who is from Nazareth, then they might have moved or they might have had a second house. So, yeah. But I mean, you know, one of the things I was reading in conversation with God about Mary's birthday, and one of the things that they talk about is how so much of Mary's life, I mean, of course, not even her youth or her immaculate conception is left out of the Bible. So much of it we don't know about, you know, and yet, in a way, like Mary is different from us in the sense that, you know, she is immaculately conceived. She was conceived without sin and she is Jesus's mother, the Son of God's mother. But at the same time, she's so much like us too, because her life happens behind the scenes, just like ours does, you know, and like she wasn't out there, you know, with the spotlight on her and like, you know, she wasn't the superstar and like, but yet she still had such great faith and she didn't have people looking at her and saying, oh, how wonderful you are all the time, you know, but it was like she still lived this life and she lived this yes every day of her life. And so like you were saying that, you know, we're Catholic all the time. We're not just Catholic when we go to church, you know, and so Mary, this yes resounded throughout her life, even though it wasn't written about, or we don't read about it, or we don't know, you know, we don't know what she did, you know.
She cooked and cleaned and took care of a baby and, you know, a husband, and she did all the normal stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's crazy to think about that kind of thing, you know, Mary changing Jesus's diaper.
Well, it's very comforting to me. It's that whole, I don't know, there's something about it. You know, it's real life. It's real stuff. It's not pie in the sky. At the same time, though, you know, she is like the mother of God.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
And now she's, you know, the queen of heaven and earth. And, you know, so it's like, it's cool because she's like our mother, too. And we can be close and tight. And we can pray and be close to her and have a real relationship with her. But at the same time, I mean, pretty big deal, you know?
Yeah.
Pretty big deal.
You're right.
I found it really interesting yesterday at Mass. I was at the Abbey, at St. Joseph Abbey Covington. And so funny, though, to, you know, because the certain feasts that we have throughout the church, I think that people, it just typically confuse people, right? Like the Immaculate Conception is always so confusing for people. And it's like, here we are with the birth of Mary. Right. You know, and so what happens? The gospel reading is about the birth of Jesus. you know, so you go to Mass and that was the gospel reading. And it's like, well, wait, we're talking about Mary, but then there's, you know, the birth of Jesus. Well, the truth is just what you said a few minutes ago. There's very little in the Bible about Mary specifically. And so some of those passages, most of them are when she was, you know, the early years of Jesus' birth and all of that, is what the church looks to when it focuses on Mary, because that's what we have.
Yeah, that's awesome. So, yeah, it's funny. You know, for those who are confused, Jesus was not the Immaculate Conception. Mary was the Immaculate Conception, right? The concept is that Mary was conceived immaculately without sin. So, and it was because God got to pick and create his mother, the mother of his, you know, his only son. And so he decided to make her without original sin. So, yeah. You know, it's funny. One of the things that you, just hearing you talk about how Mary is she's like this, she's the queen of heaven and earth, and yet she was a normal person at some point, you know, it kind of makes me think about how I tend to associate with people, you know, like, when I meet really famous people, like, have you ever thought about this? How you know, and what I tend to do is I tend to find something that I can talk to them in common. So like, for instance, recently I was invited to this dinner because, you know, the World Meeting of Families is coming and like there are all these really important people coming to Philadelphia. And I got invited to this dinner. I'm sure it was last minute, like somebody probably dropped out. And my friend Catherine was like, I know, I'll call Diana. So like I went and there were all these like really important people. And I was like sitting there feeling like all little. And the thing that made me so happy was finding something completely unrelated to what we were talking about that I had in common with these people. So like one person who is like, he's written books. This guy is like, you know, he knew the priest who married me. Yeah, who is somebody who my sister has known since before he was a priest. So like, he's like a total friend of the family. And I was like, oh my gosh, you know, Father Steve. So like, we totally talked about that and we didn't talk about how important he is, you know? And then like other lady, she's like doing some huge important things. And then I was like, oh my gosh, are you the daughter of my torts professor in law school? And she was. And I was like so happy because I'm just like, and that's kind of like, you know, you think about the Virgin Mary and how she's like, she's the mother of God. She's like the mostest. Yeah. And then it's like, but she loves you and she cares about all your everyday things. And so like, if you just be like, hey, Mary, you know, random stupid things in my life, then she'll be like, totally.
Oh, yeah. You know? And you know, you see how she reminds us, though, even in the different apparitions that she has, you know, when she comes to visit, like Guadalupe as an example. What does she say to Juanito?
She says, do you remember the words? Afraid. Yeah.
Do not be afraid. Am I not your mother? Am I not here? Who am you? Do I not have you right here in the crossing of my arms?
Yeah.
I got goosebumps thinking about it. I mean, she's just so tender and so loving and so motherly, you know, like a mama. She's my mama, you
she
know?
She is.
Yeah. And it's just, we need that. We desperately, I think, in our world need that.
We are going to take a break, but when we come back, we'll hear more from Jeff Young, the Catholic foodie, on the Faithful Traveler Radio Show on Breadbox Media. Welcome back. You're listening to the Faithful Traveler Radio Show with me, Diana Von Glahn, on Breadbox Media. Before our break, we were talking with Jeff Young, the Catholic foodie. Let's get back to that conversation.
We grew up too fast. We think that we do it all. We think that we're adults. We think that we've got it all under control. And the truth is that Jesus calls us to be children, just little children, you know, before him and of course, before Our Lady as well.
Yeah.
So every time I think I know it all, I try to run away from myself.
Yeah.
Get away from that guy. Get away.
Yeah.
Go pray.
Yeah.
Because that's a dangerous place to be.
Yeah, definitely. And it, you know, I think that the Blessed Mother does want us to come to her, you know, like children and to trust in her, you know, and especially, I mean, like, you know, the fact that, you know, she, when she appears to these people, she tries to look like somebody that they would recognize in the sense that, you know, she takes on their manners of dress and she takes on their skin tone, you know, like Our Lady of Cabejo. I mean, she didn't appear as an Arabic woman or, you know, to Juan Diego. She wasn't an Arabic woman. She was an Aztec princess, you know? And so he was like, oh, hey, you know? So I think that's awesome.
Yeah, she's that is true. It's so true. It is pretty amazing when you think about it. I mean, the whole idea, the concept that, you know, Mary is body and soul in heaven.
Yeah.
Right? And she can, I guess, change her appearance, you know? It's just like Jesus walking through walls or whatever at the, you know, after he rose from the dead. And what an amazing thought or concept. But it, at the same time, it's that tenderness of trying to come to us in a way that we will understand or that we can relate to. And, you know, when I was younger, I used to always imagine, you know, having an apparition or an angel or Our Lady or something appearing to me would be so awesome, you know. Now I think I'd probably die of a heart attack.
Really? You think so?
That's so, you know, funny. It's like, oh, an angel appears to me? Oh, wow. I'd be like, poof.
Really? I know. I think God will give us the graces that we need, you know, if something like that were to happen. But yeah, I can't even begin to imagine that either, you know. So that's awesome. Well, so happy belated birthday to the Blessed Mother. But now today's saint is somebody who, you know, I have heard his name a lot, but for some reason I don't know too much about him. Do you know a lot about Saint Peter Claver?
I don't know a whole lot about him.
Yeah.
If I remember correctly, he was a slave, and or am I confused about that? Let me.
Well, Saint. Okay, so he was Spanish. So I guess his original name was Pedro Claver y Corbero. So he was from Catalonia. Yeah. And so what he did was. He is the patron saint of slaves, and he went down to Colombia.
That's what it was.
And he ministered to the blacks there. And you know, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. Like you look at people, like I'm looking at one of his biographies online, and it says he went to Colombia to minister to the African Americans, and I'm thinking, were they African American? Or were they Colombians? Okay, they were slaves, you know. So right. Yeah, so he was a missionary. He was a Jesuit, and he was a missionary, and he helped work with the slaves. But so yeah, and so I don't know too much about him. He died on September 8th, but I guess because you know the Virgin Mary takes precedence, he gets the day after his death for his right. Saint's Day. So, right. Yeah, but now, so, you know, one of the things the Knights of Peter Claver, mm-hmm. they are the largest African American Catholic fraternal organization. So that's pretty cool. So he's like a huge patron saint for African Americans and for people, you know, who, well, I mean, I guess African Americans, because they see the fact that a lot of them had slave, you know, background in their family. So. Yeah.
Right. And that's where I made that connection, I think, of him being a slave, but he wasn't. He worked with the slaves.
Right.
And the reason that he sticks out to me is because we have it's really a pretty well-known parish in New Orleans, in the Archdiocese of New Orleans, called St. Peter Claver.
Oh, okay.
Catholic Church. It's right down in Treme. It's right down in, like, because of the show, Treme is a now very famous area, right, which was really very, very poor, you know, at least in the time of. For a long while, for 4 years, I was working for a Catholic nonprofit organization in New Orleans, and we would take old Catholic churches and that were abandoned. I mean, you have to understand that we have like so many in New Orleans. So many churches, buildings are like on every corner. It's unreal.
Right.
But we would take these abandoned churches that are dilapidated and abandoned schools, and we would get funding. Some of it was government funding. Some of it was from private organizations. And we would resurrect, if you will, these buildings into some other way of serving the community. So they may end up as housing for the poor, or housing for the disabled, or for the elderly. And I worked on a number of projects that were down in that area. And the very last one I was working on was right down the street from St. Peter Claver. Matter of fact, Father Michael Jacques, who is now deceased, but he was a tremendous force in that community. He was a white priest in this African-American parish in this area, and he was so loved, and he was just so on fire with both the love of God, but also with that sense of urgency in trying to you know, thy kingdom come, and making that manifest here, and did so much for the community there in Treme. He worked with us. It was a joint project trying to get that last project that I worked on, at least, together, which is ironically, or maybe not ironically, is the old St. Anne Shrine down in the Treme area that was turned. That old shrine was turned into apartments for the poor, I believe.
Wow.
So that whole area, though, in New Orleans, you know, we have a large African American population here, and a very long history as well. Right down the street, again, not too far from the parish there, St. Peter Claver, is a restaurant.
Mm-hmm.
And that restaurant, Dookie Chase is the name of it.
Mm-hmm.
And Chef Leah Chase, one of the most, I guess, famous American chefs probably in the world, is still cooking. She's in that restaurant. She's like 92 years old.
Yeah.
And she is still cooking. The early conversations before the equal rights movement, right? The early conversations were taking place in that restaurant.
What do you mean the early conversations? Like between who?
Well, and I don't know all the details of the story. I'm just remembering from what she told us at lunch one day. We did a radio show, the Round the Table radio show with her. We interviewed her live, and she served us some of that awesome food. I guess you could classify it as soul food, Creole cooking down here in New Orleans. And she served us some of that food and was telling us a story about the restaurant, but about, you know, really her life. I mean, she's 92 and a half. She knows a lot of things, you know, and remembers everything. She's served presidents, princes, and prelates. I mean, people from all over the world, and knew a lot of the famous people personally, you know. Mike, the Jackson Five used to come in. Every time they come in town, they would go to eat at Dookie Chase's, and she used to cook for them. And she used to actually make some things and ship them to Michael Jackson's house.
Oh, that's
for
awesome.
Him. So anyway, wonderful, wonderful woman. But some of the conversations early on when they were gathering before they were, you know, that we had the whole the equal rights and all of that, it was still very tense. I mean, there's a lot of tension, you know, racial tension. Some of the early meetings, kind of organizational meetings that were taking place in that restaurant, between, you know, black leaders, or I guess what would be called black leaders at the time, you know, to try to work to get equal rights. I mean, it's kind of hard even for us, I think, in 2015 to look back and to imagine what that must have been like, you know.
That's crazy. Yeah. Wow. Yeah. So what are some of the things that you've had at this restaurant? Because, you know, it's funny, when I was in elementary school and throughout school, I went to a school of creative and performing arts, and some of our teachers wrote a musical too. Do you remember the cartoon called Wee Pals? Did you ever see that? I think it was a comic strip or something, but it was like it was just like an interracial group of kids, and they all were different. And one of the songs that they wrote was called Soul Food. So every time I hear the word soul food, the song pops in my head. And the first two lines are soul food, shovel it in. And
that's
awesome. I never had any idea what soul food was. I mean, you know, I grew up in San Diego, where it was all, you know, like, I don't know, Tex-Mex, California cuisine. But I mean, so what is soul food? And does it vary from region to region?
Well, you know, it's one of those things. I guess it would depend on where you are, as to a definition. But basically, it's a cuisine that I think is characteristically Southern, and is known. I mean, it's called soul food basically because it was part of the black community. Mm. And it's various. I mean, to us, it's all kind of blended. We're like a gumbo down here, our whole culture. You know, we have the Cajuns over in the Southwest Louisiana, the Lafayette area. We have the Creoles and the New Orleans area and Baton Rouge, where I grew up, in the middle. So we were, you know, we had them on both sides. And all of it kind of blends together, you know. And the whole Creole culture itself is really a blending together of the African and the Haitian and the, you know, the French, and so all of it kind of comes together. And it's the same thing, I think, with soul food. A lot of what you would see characterized as soul food could be seen also as simply just typical, you know, Southern fare,
right?
Southern cuisine.
We are going to take a break, but when we come back, we'll hear more from Jeff Young, the Catholic foodie, on the Faithful Traveler Radio Show on Breadbox Media. Vaya Pachito en el mambo. Pues sí, señores, esta es la verdad. Hay un señor de tal. Welcome back. You're listening to the Faithful Traveler Radio Show with me, Diana Von Glahn, on Breadbox Media. Before our break, we were talking with Jeff Young, the Catholic foodie. Let's get back to that conversation.
Fried chicken, collard greens, grits,
mac and cheese.
mac and cheese. Down here, you're going to have, of course, we're in New Orleans. We're on the Mississippi River. We have right there on the Gulf of Mexico, we have tons of seafood here, lots of fresh seafood. So you're going to see the fried catfish, and fried shrimp and all that yummy stuff. Fried alligator. Everything fried.
Oh, my gosh.
Got to have it fried.
Yeah.
Really, really good stuff. I remember when I was in Baton Rouge in college, I was in the seminary for part of it, but long story, my whole college career, well, it's really complicated, but for a little while I was at LSU. I studied at LSU.
Okay.
And when I was in Baton Rouge, there was a restaurant that had been there. It was like a Baton Rouge icon. I mean, this place was just phenomenal. Mm-hmm. And people would come from all over the place to eat there, but literally it was a shack.
Hmm.
And it was on the sides of the railroad tracks. And literally on the side of the railroad tracks, you have to leave LSU, you have to drive a couple of miles out, you cross these railroad tracks, and then you immediately have to turn on this little dirt road to get down to the shacks. No air conditioning in it. Hmm. And it's called Silver Moon Cafe. And anybody who went to LSU from wherever in the last probably, I don't know, I guess they closed down maybe 10, 15 years ago. But prior to that, they would know about Silver Moon Cafe. And Mama, who was in the kitchen all the time cooking. And, you walk in and it's like a plate lunch. You have a couple of options for the day. And it could be fried chicken and collard greens. Might be white beans and rice. It could be round steak, rice and gravy. I mean, there's a lot of rice, a lot of gravy.
Mm-hmm.
And you can have water or iced tea.
Hmm.
That's it.
That's
water
awesome.
Or iced tea.
Yeah.
And there was no air conditioning. It was just an amazing little place. No television sitting there either. You got to sit there and talk to each other. It was really, really neat. And people would love to go there.
Yeah.
It was real home cooking from scratch.
That's
Mama's
awesome.
Cooking.
Wow. That's sad that they closed down.
It was caught fire. It caught on fire and closed down, and she didn't have the money to rebuild it, apparently. And at some point for a while, I don't know if she's still doing this, but at one point she was cooking out of her house every day.
Mm-hmm.
And she wasn't too far from the downtown area where she lived, and she would cook out of her house, and people could order lunch, and they just come and pick it up. They would swing by her house, and I guess she would be outside. People pick up their lunch. And so
that's awesome.
some good memories there. And that's the kind of thing that you hate to see go. You hate to see that go.
Yeah.
But that's life, that happens.
Well, it's funny. I mean, just listening to you talk about these things, it reminds me of, the little old ladies making tortillas, there is something about, when I was younger, I guess I would have called it like poor people food, in the sense that those who don't have a lot of money to be having steak every night or, to be going out to dinner every night, they eat a lot of bread, they eat a lot of rice, they eat a lot of beans, but the things that they do with those ingredients are just amazing, I think it's so funny. One of the interesting things, because I would say that we were kind of like lower middle class, growing up, and we ate a lot of beans. We ate a lot of beans. We had a lot of tortillas, and it has been interesting in my life moving from the West Coast to the East Coast, and also getting to a point where, I remember when I first moved to New York City and being with people who they would go to dinner every night. And I just found that to be so odd, because going to dinner was a special occasion for my family, and so going to dinner every night, now it's just, of course, normal, but back then it was just weird. And so that the thing, when I think about soul food, that's what I think about, people cooking all day, putting their everything that they could into these pots, and then what comes out is something magic. It's almost like stone soup. Did you ever read that story when you were little?
Oh my goodness. but I don't remember all that. I have a hard time remembering what happened yesterday.
But that's so
what,
they...
what. Tell me the story.
Oh, stone soup. Oh gosh, I don't remember it. I think it was that somebody put a bunch of stones in some soup, and you know what came out of it was yummy. But like the idea isn't so much what you're making, but the love that you put into it. You know, and I think that's why I think it's so appropriate that they call it soul food, because it's like it's not so much, you know, fancy food or anything. It's food that's made with love and that's given to people with love. You know, I think that's one of the things that I love about all you food people is that you're all so generous and you're constantly wanting to fatten the rest of us up.
That's right. We're trying to get you ready in case you have to fast one day. You know, maybe it's going to be really, really cold outside. You have to have some extra insulation, mm-hmm. you know?
That's right. I know, right? Oh, my gosh. But, I mean, when I was a cookbook editor, I actually worked on a soul food cookbook. There was a woman here in Philadelphia. Her name was Delilah Winder, and she made this mac and cheese that apparently Oprah said was, like, the best. It was one of her, like, Oprah's best things, you know? And so we did Delilah's cookbook, and it was a soul food cookbook. And that mac and cheese was amazing. But, you know, it was a lot of the collard greens and fried chicken and beans. And I'll have to find that cookbook. I don't know if I have that anymore.
And but okra.
What is a lot
of okra too. Yeah.
Isn't okra like slimy?
Yes, it is. Most definitely.
But, you know, it's interesting because I was, so I was working on, I was watching part of our show, A Papal Pilgrimage in the Holy Land. And at one point we had dinner with a Christian family in Bethlehem, and they made us this soup. I forget the name of the soup. It's in Arabic. And part of it, the defining ingredient in this soup was like a green that was like okra, because it had this... what was the word that they used? Like a slimy quality to it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like mm-hmm. a gelatinous kind of thing, you know?
It's a thickener.
Yeah. Yeah. So do you eat okra?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the okra, I mean, one of the classic ingredients of a gumbo is okra. You know, you can have a shrimp and okra gumbo as one of the, I guess, a classic style of gumbo down here. And they use okra in other gumbos too. I mean, typically when you talk about gumbo, it's the roux. Mm-hmm. Which is equal parts flour and oil, flour and fat, some kind of fat, right? That gives the gumbo its color, the brown mm-hmm. color. It also gives it its distinctive flavor, which is kind of a nuttiness, which comes from the flour, which is frying really in the oil. Mm-hmm. And then it also serves as a thickener of the gumbo. But okra, because it does have this slimy quality, is wonderful for thickening a gumbo. Huh. So it's a typical ingredient that we would use for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And I've seen
people like to fry it too.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. I mean, does it get... I imagine the sliminess goes away if you fry it, right?
Well, it's going to go away no matter what you do. If you cook it down, there's a recipe that I use where it's smothered okra with tomatoes, and it's... I like to... When I cook with okra, I like to put bacon grease down as my fat, you know. Yum. I like to do it in bacon grease. It's really, really good. Mm. So, but when you cook down the okra and tomatoes, it's smothered. It's mm-hmm. smothered okra mm-hmm. with okra and tomatoes. Really, really good. But yeah, the sliminess will, it gets cooked out, you know. And it's the same thing when you're frying it. It's not going to be slimy when you fry it. It gets cooked out. And I like that the frying it. I hated okra when I was a kid. Actually, hated it.
Why?
And my mother loved it, and so we had it often. And I was always, it's like it smells great when it's being cooked. So I've always got deceived, you know, like this is gonna taste good this time. It never did until I grew up, and now it tastes great. But you know, back then it didn't. And I just have so many memories of my mother, but also my grandfather frying okra.
Yeah,
it's really. Really cool. That's a distinctive smell.
I'm going to have to create like a menu of food that I want you to make for me when I come visit you. Because like okra is one of those things that I cannot eat. I mean, I've never had it.
It's good. It's good. It really is. And if you come, we'll do gumbo. We'll do a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
You know, fried okra. All
yeah.
That.
Yeah. That's awesome.
But you know, when I think about, and I do have a little... recipe here for macaroni and cheese I could read off to you. It's not my own recipe, but it's a famous person's recipe. But before I do that, you know, another typical style, I guess you'd say, or dish, type of dish or cooking technique that is used in soul food, which every time I hear soul food, you know, you were thinking about that song. I think about Soul Train.
Really?
Remember the show on television?
Yeah.
This kind of like, what was the American
Bandstand?
Bandstand.
Yeah.
Right? And the American Bandstand and then Soul Train. I remember, that's what I think of when I hear soul food. But anyway, one of the distinctive types of cooking is smothered, right? Something smothered. And so etouffee, as a matter of fact, etouffee means smothered. And so you have a crawfish etouffee, or you have a shrimp etouffee, or a chicken etouffee, which is really good. They served with rice. But anything else can be smothered, too. So you could have smothered pork chops. You can have smothered round steak. You know, and smothered typically would be smothered in onions and bell peppers and whatever else. You know, so you're going to have some fat that goes down in the pan, and then you're going to kind of caramelize or saute your onions and bell peppers. And then you're going to, or actually even before that, if you're doing a meat, you know, you would put a real hot pan and you would put that meat down there and brown it. You want to brown it so that you have some, what we call it, gratin. It's that sticky, sticky stuff that sticks to the pot, and you scrape it off at the bottom. And then you have your onions and your bell peppers in there. And then you'd add a little... You could be water, or better to be some sort of a stock, you know, a chicken stock or something to that. And, oh my goodness, the flavor is just incredible.
We are going to take a break, but when we come back, we'll hear more from Jeff Young, the Catholic foodie, on the Faithful Traveler Radio Show on Breadbox Media. Welcome back. You're listening to the Faithful Traveler Radio Show with me, Diana Von Glahn, on Breadbox Media. Before our break, we were talking with Jeff Young, the Catholic foodie. Let's get back to that conversation.
So once you brown that meat, you stick it back in with the onions and the bell peppers, and you've got that kind of gravy, natural kind of gravy that's forming there, and it's smothered, and it's just, so good.
Is anybody else
hungry?
You
can just put it up.
I'm starving.
Put it over rice.
I want everything now. I'm hungry. I'm going to go down and shove the refrigerator in my mouth.
Well, I tell you, you know, soul food, Creole, I mean, if you go to New Orleans today, you're going to have a lot. It depends on the restaurant you go to. But if you go to like a higher-end restaurant, you go to Dookie Chase's today, you're going to get a high-end soul food. You're going to get a high-end Creole. You know what I'm saying? It's not going to be just like your mac and cheese. It's going to be like your Mac Daddy mac and cheese. It's going to be, you know what I mean? It's going to be with really good ingredients and all of that. Whereas traditionally, if you look at soul food, it's not necessarily the healthiest thing in the world.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, a lot of fried stuff, a lot of, you know, the fried chicken and fried okra and all of that. Now, your greens are pretty basic. You're going to have your mustard greens, your collard greens, and all of that. And they're going to be cooked down, and it's really kind of hard to, well, I guess you could. I always like to cook mine down in bacon grease.
I know, right?
It's really, really good. But it's not necessarily the healthiest thing in the world.
Yeah.
So when you look at this, I have a recipe here. Irma Thomas is a name that people down in South Louisiana would recognize. Irma Thomas is a musician. She's a singer.
Okay.
And pretty famous in these parts, you know. And Irma Thomas shared her recipe for macaroni and cheese. I'm not going to go through the whole thing, but I will tell you this is the ingredients, okay?
Okay.
2 pounds of macaroni, 6 large eggs, 1/4 cup of sugar, salt and black pepper to taste, 3 to 4 cups of milk, and then 1 pound total of several varieties of cheese, such as cheddar and American. Or others, you know, you can, if you have a leftover cheese tray, as an example, you can use all that.
Yum.
And then some, you know. And then also you want to have some grated cheese to put on top after it cooks, you know. You can add it for topping, a little effect there on top. So that, and you just mix it all together and cook it, you know, bake it in an oven, 350 degrees.
I'm surprised, and, no butter?
She doesn't call for butter, which is, yeah, you are. You're right. That is kind of surprising.
Huh.
It's a whole lot of milk, though.
That is a lot of milk.
I probably would have used bacon grease.
So, you know, one of the cheeses that Delilah used in her grilled, or her mac and cheese was Asiago.
Oh, yeah.
So good. Oh, my
That's really
God.
Good.
That is like the king of cheeses. It's so good. Oh, man. Very sharp, very nice. So, yeah, I think that's one of the big things is that, you know, there are now, for a while, soul food was kind of like, oh, everybody wanted it. But then everybody was kind of like, wait a minute, this isn't very healthy. So now that's kind of the new thing, you know, it's like healthy soul food when that's got to be kind of a challenge.
Yeah, it is. I mean, you can still, you go, I mean, it's really interesting. You have a variety of different types of restaurants around here. You know, a lot of, yeah, of course, you go to the city, you go to New Orleans, you got like 1,600 different restaurants in the city. It's ridiculous.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful, but it's ridiculous. And you'll find some restaurants that are really high end or not even high end. They're just, they're not fast food and they're not just like a deli type kitchen. You know, they're serving really good food made to order, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
You have other restaurants that are really just like your little cafes. You know, and people come in, come and go, and they may be there only open for lunch.
Yeah.
And a lot of these places will serve, they'll call it either soul food or they call it country cooking or they call it Creole, you know, but it's all along the same lines, all of it.
Mm-hmm.
And just really, really good. You know, it's very enjoyable. And, you know, you eat a little cornbread. Cornbread's pretty good. Put some butter on it.
Yeah. Oh my gosh.
Hungry yet?
Well, and now let's talk about, we didn't even start talking about like the desserts and the pies and stuff that, you know, I mean, I guess it's not so much soul food as it is like a Southern tradition, right?
Oh, the pie. Oh, yeah. I mean, pie, sweet potato pie. Woo. Sweet potato, because we have delicious sweet potatoes down here in South Louisiana.
Yeah.
And sweet potato pies. Pumpkin pies. Pumpkin pies are always good.
I always wanted a shoe fly pie.
Shoe fly pie?
Shoe fly pie.
And pralines. And that's a Creole thing, I would imagine. The pralines, you know, which they make with pecans. They almost come out looking like cookies.
Mm.
All it is sugar.
Yeah,
butter.
sugar, butter, and nuts, right?
A little bit of flour, I think, and that's about it. And then the nuts, you know?
Oh, it's my like, Lord.
Yeah.
Wow. It's no.
I know.
Wow. I mean, oh now, my gosh. Yum.
Now we talked about giving up sugar last show.
Yeah.
Last week. You know?
Yeah. How's that going?
It's going great.
Yeah.
Going great.
Yeah. And now we're talking about pralines.
Well, now we are. I mean, that's I'm bringing this up, you know?
Have you been dreaming about pralines?
No, but I tell you, I did this past Sunday was the first time, really. It's been about a week and a half, almost 2 weeks now that I've since I gave up sugar.
Mm-hmm.
And Sunday was the first time that I really was like, I really do want something sweet.
Yeah.
You know, but I just prayed and did something else.
Well,
and,
but what about like fruit or something? I mean, fruit's on the menu, right?
Yeah, it is. It's
but
just
it's not as good as pralines.
It's just right. Yeah. It's just yeah.
I for those people who follow me on social media, I just got two big old boxes of sugar from my parents. Did you see the other day they sent me two boxes of pomegranates?
That was a wicked crazy. I love that. That's fantastic.
I love pomegranates. So we have, when I was a little girl, I don't know how I was introduced to the pomegranate, but growing up in California, you know, pomegranates are only, they're like citrus. They're grown in the same zone as citrus, which is generally like 8, I think, which is like California and Florida and, you know, places like that, like the Holy Land as well. Because there are pomegranate trees everywhere in the Middle East. Do you remember that? And Spain has them too. Yeah.
And I've always had mixed feelings about pomegranates because, on the one hand, the taste is just awesome. I love it. I just absolutely love it. But they're all those little seeds.
You eat them.
You know?
They're good.
I never wanted to eat those seeds. I was just like, this is too much work. It's like, Yeah. You know, eating cherries. That's like a lot of work.
Yeah.
You know?
That's what I was talking to. I don't think I've ever met another person. I eat the seeds. Like I will sit and scoop just, you know, spoonfuls of these wonderful little jewels. In fact, I love pomegranate so much. I wrote one of my college essays, my college application essays on pomegranate season.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, they're so good.
That's awesome.
I'll have to find that because it was really good. But it's like I have this whole science where it's like I learned how to cut them open without cutting any of the seeds. There is no wasting in my pomegranate seed opening. It's like all, you know, and they don't stain my clothes. Like my mom used to throw me in the garage with a coverall of my dad's and like newspapers everywhere. And she'd be like, don't stain my things, you know? But like now I'll sit in the living room and do it. And like nothing is dirty. I'm so good at it. So like my parents eventually planted a pomegranate tree in our backyard. Mm-hmm. And so every fall, they send me like insane amounts of pomegranates and I will just sit there for 2 days. Yeah, that's what it took me a day and a half to peel all of these. And I have like probably, three ginormous Tupperware bowls of pomegranates. So good.
And how long does that keep?
Well, I put them in those Tupperware bowls that have like aeration so that they don't, like if they get soggy, then they start to mold, you know? But I try to eat them very quickly.
Oh, yeah. I don't blame you.
Like a week or something, you know, or two, because there is moisture in there, you know? It's kind of, they're not as fragile as berries, you know, like berries get wet and that's it. The next day they're ruined, you know? They'll last a little longer. And if I, you know, sometimes I'll just give them another quick rinse and I'll just be like, they're good.
Yep, they're good.
But it's like, right. I swear, if there's anything in my life that keeps me from getting cancer, it's this yearly intake of insane antioxidants of eating these. And so what I do is like, I'll put them in a bowl. And I'll just scoop them and eat, and I chew the seeds, which is probably not good for my teeth, you know, but it's great fiber.
Yeah.
You know? And so, yeah, very yummy. Because otherwise, like, my dad will juice them, and like, a lot of people will be like, oh, I'll just, you know, chew the things and then spit out the seeds. But it's like, then you're just drinking juice, and then it's nothing but sugar, you know? Yeah. And I tend to be of the mind that, you know, a fruit is perfect the way that God made it, and that includes the fiber, you know? So you got to chew it. So, yeah. I'll post pictures of my pomegranates. They're awesome.
That's awesome. I love that. Oh, I love that. Man. It reminds me, though, that Monsignor Nalty in New Orleans, you know, he was one of the co-hosts on the Around the Table Food Show. And we would talk from time to time, especially the summertime when shrimp are in season and plentiful. And, you know, one of the famous recipes for shrimp is barbecue shrimp. And they're not technically barbecue. That's just the, I don't know why we call it that. There's probably different reasons why we call it that. But barbecue shrimp. And you know, you typically would, you cook them whole. You got to have a head on shrimp. And so you would peel them to eat them. Mm-hmm. And he would always say he eats the shells. He eats the whole thing.
Oh, my gosh.
And he said the same thing as you. He said, oh, it's just more fiber and more roughage, you know? And I'm going, oh, my goodness. You know, I can't. Uh-uh.
Well, but
I can't,
can't do that. That's like eating soft shell crab, right?
Well, it's a little bit different. I mean, the barbecue, I don't know. The shrimp shells are not, I wouldn't want to eat them.
To find out more about Jeff Young and the Catholic Foodie, listen to his podcast, order his book, and follow his travels, go to catholicfoodie.com or subscribe to his podcast on iTunes. And visit us online at www.thefaithfultraveler.com. Talk to you tomorrow.